So welcome back. Hopefully everybody had a pretty good break. Relax a little bit. Any questions on anything that we've talked about so far? Any questions that came up on the midterm? If you're bored, you guys got all the answers now. But if there's any questions, look it over and let me know. So today we're going to talk about Chapter 10. Chapter 10 deals with managing networks for virtual machines. So this chapter is a little bit hard for me because I can't expect that you've all taken the networking class here. It's not a prerequisite for this class. I know just from the faces that a lot of you were in my networking class at one point or have taken the network class prior to coming to me. So we can talk about it a little bit. I'm going to go in depth a little bit in networking. Some of the stuff we talk about, again, in introduction to networking. So for some of you, it may be review. For some of you, it may be something new. Hopefully, we'll all glean a little bit of information from it anyway. But we're going to talk in terms of virtualized networks and how it affects how our hypervisors deal with the networking environment. Because, again, networking is huge, right? Communications is huge. Virtual machines are great. You can run 10 virtual machines on your desktop, but if you don't have any networking, you're not going to be able to access them remotely, right? So who does that help? Nobody, right? You can run Linux and Windows on your home computer at the same time, but even then, you still want some networking components because you want to get out on the web, right? Nobody really uses a computer anymore that's not connected to a network in one form or another, wireless, wired, what have you. So we'll get into that. So again, we're going to talk about how it connects to the physical network, how they connect and talk, how to configure some of the options so that we can expand our networking options and broaden our network base, some basic virtual networking concepts, and then some tuning practices for virtual machines. So again, what is a network? Anybody know what the definition of a network is? Web server definition. Two or more devices talking back and forth to each other, right? So again, you can have two computers connect to each other and that creates a network. Generally, when it's just two computers, it's what we call an ad hoc network, meaning there isn't a third-party device doing the translation. It's a direct communication back and forth. So in a typical networking environment, we'll usually have three or more devices. We'll have that intermediary device. Again, if you're doing a wireless network, maybe you're taking your client computer, you're connecting it via the wireless device, and then the wireless device is translating it to some other devices. In our home environments, typically, we have a modem that connects us to our internet service provider. If we have just a single computer, maybe we connect that computer directly to the modem. If we have multiple computers in our house, we use another device prior to that modem. We can use a hub, we can use a switch, or we can use a router. Again, the hub is the base device. That's what everybody used to use because it's the cheapest device. A hub is what they call a layer one device. Again, layer one dealing with the seven layers of the OSI model, an important topic in networking discussions. Again, something that you need to concern yourself with in a networking class. Seven layers of the OSI model, not so important here. But again, the hub acts as a layer one device. All it does is receive the information and repeat it out all its ports. So it doesn't make any interpretations of anything that it receives. It doesn't do any type of filtering or decision making. It just receives electrical impulses and forwards them out all its ports. The reason why we don't use hubs anymore, again, it repeats everything it hears. It spreads everything out over the ports. In order to use it in your home network, you would have to have public-facing IP addresses on all your computers. Back in the day, internet service providers provided five static IP addresses to everybody so everybody could connect up to five devices with a hub onto their internet connection. Putting public-facing IP addresses on computers, not necessarily the greatest idea. It makes them publicly addressable. You can reach them anywhere in the world. Sounds like a good idea in theory. Not a very good idea in terms of security. So again, we need to improve upon that. And we also want to remove those public-facing IP addresses. So again, public-facing IP addresses, still now today, IPv4. So there's two different standards that are very popular now, IPv4 and IPv6, Internet Protocol version 4. We've run out of really address space. There's two different types of address space, public address space, private IP address space. Private IP address space can be repeated over and over and over again. Typically on your home networks, you'll see something like 192.168. A lot of people use 192.168. Again, 192.168 is not a publicly addressable IP space because everybody uses it in their private networks. Maybe not, but they can. So again, you'll have a public IP address and you'll have a private IP address. And then there's some sort of translation that goes off between those. And again, we'll talk about that more later today. And then if you take that introduction to networking, you take advanced networking, you'll deal with it in depth. So again, IPv4 space is limited. So we want to reduce the amount of public IP addresses that we're giving out to people. So now we're going to install a different type of device that allows us to use private IP addresses on our internal network and public IP addresses on our external network. So now we move up a layer in the OSI model, we go to layer 2. So now we're dealing with switches. So switches now talk via MAC addresses. So each computer that we use to connect to our wired network has a network interface card or a NIC port. Each one of those NIC ports has a unique MAC address associated with it. It's unique via the hardware provider, so the first 6 characters in your MAC address are the actual organizationally unique identifier, the person who manufactured that device. And then the rest of the device, the rest of that address is a unique number that they've assigned to. There are methods to go in and actually change your MAC address. It's called MAC address spoofing. Back in the day, people used to use a service called BootP. BootP used the MAC address to load configurations onto devices. So if I was going to install a brand new server and I wanted it to have a configuration of an old server, I'd go in and legitimately change the MAC address of that device to load that information from the BootP server. Nowadays, we use DHCP. DHCP is above that. Again, DHCP relies on MAC addresses as well, but it does it in sort of a different fashion. Again, that's more towards the introduction to networking. We're not going to really be concerned with that here. So again, switches make those decisions. Switches talk to other devices. They can, they're a little bit smarter. They make decisions on who gets what traffic, a little more security. Above that, we talk about layer 3. Layer 3 devices is when we talk routing. Routing, we talk in terms of IP addresses. So now we know the IP address of the computer, and we can make the decisions based on who gets the information. So if you have a network in your house, and you have a device that provides you a 192.168 address, that device is a router. Typically, you'll have a router modem combination, so you'll only have one device that performs both functions. Moving from a home environment into a corporate environment, now you're going to get all kinds of other devices involved. So you'll have switches all over the place that does that layer 2 transaction dealing with MAC addresses. Those switches will connect to routers. Routers will deal with the layer 3 addressing, making forwarding decisions. And the layer 3 devices will talk to some other devices, maybe firewalls, intrusion detection systems, intrusion prevention systems, things like that. So in terms of a physical network, again, we talked, there's two sorts of groups that we deal with when we talk about our virtual infrastructure and our virtual environment. We talk the network engineers who deal with the networking device, and we talk about the systems administrators who deal with the systems administration and server setups and things like that. These two groups don't necessarily always get along, right? Because software administrators break the network, and network administrators break the software. They don't get along well. There isn't a very good communication channel. If something breaks down in your environment, typically one group blames the other. It's a networking issue. No, it's a software issue. Back and forth. Again, you'll find ways to kind of narrow down what the issue actually is and put it in the right group's hands. But in terms of a virtual environment, we don't have sort of the freedom to be two separate groups, right? Because now we're consolidating physical devices into one sort of infrastructure environment. So we're going to have multiple servers that are going to talk to each other, multiple servers that have to network with each other. Those physical hosts that we have to be able to communicate over the network. So we have to have some way to facilitate that. In our environment here, our data center and our things here, we really only have one sort of networking connection. We're on one sort of flat network. If you think about larger data centers, if you think about somebody who, like Amazon or Microsoft, who provides multiple hosting solutions for multiple companies, you need to provide some way to keep those network channels separate from each other, right? I shouldn't be able to type in an IP address and reach somebody else's server in the Amazon cloud, right? I want to be able to reach my servers. I want people to be able to reach my servers, but I don't want my servers to bleed over into somebody else. So we have to kind of keep those networks separate and be able to protect our network in a large environment like that. So again, when we talk consolidation, we're talking consolidations to hosts. Again, we have our options of putting physical hardware into our devices to support multiple network connections. And using those multiple network connections, we can facilitate multiple networks on a single host device. And again, it's going to be the hypervisor that manages the network traffic from the virtual machines to the physical network. So we still have that hypervisor playing the middleman and making the decisions of who gets what traffic and what traffic goes where. So again, we have our application. Our application talks to our hypervisor. Our hypervisor has the network interface driver installed on it. It talks out of the physical network interface, and it talks to the physical network. So again, pretty straightforward, much like everything we've seen to this point in terms of how the application talks to the hypervisor and the hypervisor talks to the physical device. And again, in terms of our physical infrastructure, what exists on our host, this is showing a physical network interface card. Typically, you'll have multiple ports on that physical network interface card. You may even have multiple cards that have multiple. So again, when I was working on Dell PowerEdge servers, we had two network interface cards, and each network interface card had four ports on it. So we had eight total ports that we were able to deal with in terms of networking on a single host device. And again, in a typical environment, you're not just going to even have a single host. You'll have multiple hosts that are going to communicate with each other and share . So again, hypervisors are going to be able to manage the internal networks of the switch. We're going to create what's called a virtual distributed switch to share the information back and forth across the networks and be able to facilitate that network design. Again, going back to our home networks and our enterprise-level environment, if we have a hub, the hub, again, only repeats the information that it hears. So a hub is limited just to a single network. So in terms of networking, we talk about subnets. Subnets are how we break up our network junction pieces. So again, when we talk about our network that's in this classroom, it's a 192.168.2.something network. It has a subnet mask that dictates how many devices are available to talk on that network. Again, it lets us break our large network up into smaller pieces. Hubs don't facilitate that. All hubs do, again, are receive information, repeat it out all their ports. So it can't have different networks located on different ports. So again, when we move up to our layer two devices are smarter. They can actually make forwarding decisions. So on layer two devices, we implement something called VLANs, or virtual local area networks. So instead of just having the ability to have a single network, we can have as many networks as we have ports on the switch. So if we have a 48-port switch, we can set up 48 different VLANs, each port having a different VLAN. In terms of network hardware, network ports only support either one VLAN or all VLANs. If it supports just a single VLAN, it's said to be in access mode, and it can only support a single data VLAN and a single voice VLAN. If it's set up to trunk mode, it's going to pass all of the different VLANs that are set up on it. Now, when we connect into our physical network interface cards on our virtual devices, we can set those ports up physically on the switch to either be those access ports, or we can set them up to be trunk ports. If we set them up to be trunk ports, then it's passing all of the VLAN information directly into our virtual infrastructure. In order to be able to talk from our virtual infrastructure back out those trunk ports, we have to do what's called VLAN tagging. We have to specify which VLAN our host operating system is talking on. So anytime we send information out from our guest operating system, we have to stamp it with the VLAN that it's associated with. By default on all Cisco switches, everything's on VLAN 1. So typically the first thing that you want to do when you set up a Cisco switch is to remove everything from VLAN 1. Just saying. But if we wanted our host device to be able to talk out VLAN 1 and we were connected to what's called the trunk port, we would have to tag all of our internet traffic with VLAN 1. So packets, again, are how we break up data in our network. So we send lots of different information packets out of that port. Every time we send a packet out, we have to stamp it with that VLAN identifier. So we're actually creating a lot of network overhead by doing that, saying, oh, this is VLAN 1, this is VLAN 1, this is VLAN 1, this is VLAN 1, anytime it sends any information out. So in order to avoid that and be able to just send the information out there, we'll connect a port that's connected to VLAN 1. Again, plug it into one of our physical interfaces, and then associate that virtual machine with that VLAN. Now the host operating system isn't responsible for tagging the traffic. The virtual distributed switch inside the virtual environment sees which VLAN it's destined for and pushes it out that physical port. In terms of our computer here, we have one network interface connection. If that network interface connection goes down, our computer's offline. In our virtual environment where we're running multiple virtual machines, we don't want to send out our traffic over a single line, right? Because that provides a single point of failure for the network connectivity. So what we'll do is we'll put multiple ports that are on that VLAN into our physical networking environment and allow our virtual machines to go out whichever port has the least amount of traffic. Again, the hypervisor is going to facilitate that communication between the guest operating system and the physical network. So again, it's going to have an IP address associated in the guest operating system of the virtual machine. That IP address is going to be associated with any physical network interface on the physical host, so that they can use any of those ports at any time. again, we talked about the two different types of architectures that exist, the microkernelized architecture that VMware has, the monolithic architecture that VMware has, and the microkernelized architecture that Xen and Microsoft have. So with the microkernelized architecture, we can actually install the physical device drivers into our guest operating systems and allow them to communicate directly to that device. Again, we're not really gaining a lot by having them do that because the hypervisor is designed to handle that network traffic efficiently. So last week, the last time we had lecture, which was 3 weeks ago now, right? 3 weeks ago. We talked a lot about our storage area networks and how we're designing our storage area traffic and how that communicates over there. Again, we want to isolate our network traffic from our storage area network traffic. The reason that we want to do that is because if we send all of our storage traffic down the same path that we're sending our network traffic with, when somebody's downloading large files from the internet, it's going to affect our file read and write access. So we want to separate those out into two different devices and allow the hypervisor to control and facilitate those transactions independently. We can bridge our network connections. Again, each interface in our physical host is going to have an IP address. Each virtual guest operating system is going to have an IP address, and they're all going to be managed by the hypervisor. So we can do something called link aggregation control protocol, which actually links the different IP addresses together into a single interface. So instead of having 2 1-gigabit connections, we're going to link those two ports together, create what's called an ether channel, and allow you to have greater than 1 gigabit of throughput through your network. Again, the virtual machines are off in their own little world doing their own little thing. They have their own network connections. They think they're connected to a physical network. Again, we talk about the properties of a virtual machine and how the virtual machine isn't allowed to know that it's a virtual machine. It thinks that it's a physical machine somewhere in the real world. And the hypervisor is going to control all the interactions with the physical device. So we feed that information. That information comes back into the virtual distributed switch within the hypervisor. The hypervisor handles that network traffic and sends it out over the physical device. Earlier I mentioned that we have this concept of both private and public IP addresses. So your global public IP address, again, is provided by your internet service provider. Your internet service provider gets it from a company called Aaron, which is the keeper of all IP addresses that are public, right? So they pay a lot of money to have an IP address block space. If you're running a web server, if you're doing something that involves consistent connection to a public network, normally you'd have to pay money to your internet service provider to get a static IP address. Without paying money to get a static IP address, your internet service provider generally provides you what's called a persistent IP address. Persistent in the fact that it may change in 6 months, it may not change in 3 years, but there's no guarantee that it won't change. Right? You're not paying them to ensure that your address is always going to stay the same. So you can't bank on that. You can't bank on the fact that it will. So again, they have public IP addresses and private IP addresses. The public IP addresses are addressable anywhere on the internet. Again, they're public. We have to facilitate a means of communication to translate a public IP address to a private IP address. What that facilitating protocol is network address translation, or NAT. So there's many different types of NAT. Again, NAT is a huge topic in introduction to networking and advanced networking, there's a lot of different things that go along with network address translations and how to handle it and how to convert them. But just be aware that NAT is the means of converting a public IP address to a private IP address. Yes. I'd have to see what you're talking about. So there's network address translation, there's port address translation. So again, you have your option on the outside. Do you want it to be able to translate to your computer only on your inside network and not on your outside network? So again, if anybody in this room goes to whatismyipaddress.com, it shows you an IP address, and everybody in this room is going to have the same IP address because we're using the same interface to access the public network, right? So we go through, I think, Fairpoint Communications for our department here. So when we go out, we're using that interface on the Sonic wall that provides that network connection. So everybody's going to have the same address. When it comes back in, it needs to know how to get to your computer. So it's going to do that translation. So we do what's called port address translation, where everything going to that port and going out gets translated to a single IP address when it goes to the public way, and when it comes back, it goes to our unique computer. So again, how it does that is it uses port information, so each computer gets assigned a different communication port, and that traffic's handled appropriately. Again, you can do this at your house if you wanted to do remote management of your computer. Most residential routers now support you going in and actually setting up port forwarding, where you can specify the port and specify the destination computer. So you could go in and set up your remote desktop to port forward. So there's other easier ways of doing that. You can use external services that keep track of that information, something like TeamViewer or something like that. But you could actually go in and set up your remote desktop to be publicly accessible via your public internet address. Again, not the safest thing. Make sure you know what you're doing before you go in and try to set that up, because it can wreak havoc and be bad. So again, we'll have a limited amount of public IP addresses that we can use. We'll have a decent amount of private IP addresses that we can use. So we have 254 private IP addresses on this network, but we're going and NAT translating to just a single public IP address. You may want to NAT translate specific devices, so you may have a web server, you may have an email server. Again, depending on which port you're trying to access, you can have it set up to do that so that you don't need multiple public IP addresses to facilitate those external services. Again, there's lots of different things that we can do in order to increase the performance. Again, I said we're going to connect multiple different ports to have redundancy in our environment. You want to make sure that you do that. There's other options that you can set in terms of VMware and in terms of Hyper-V. We'll talk about some of those as we dive into that software. But there's also input-output control, quality of service, or QoS that you can set on the ports to ensure that you get that information. Again, when you install VMware tools in your guest operating systems, you're increasing the efficiency of the network interface drivers between the guest operating system and the hypervisor, which is going to increase the performance in your virtual environment. So again, it's not mandatory that you install VMware tools, but it's highly recommended. So there's that. And again, shutting down any services that you don't need that takes network control is also important. So again, we've talked about that. We've talked about how virtual machines rely on networking connected to the physical world again. sort of computer connecting to the physical world is important. We talked about the virtual distributed switch and how we can isolate the guests and things like that. We talked about bandwidth. We'll talk about some more of that as we get into the specific hardware here. And we've talked about some of the best practices. Any questions on any of that before we move on to our next?